All right, Brian, the last thing that we're going to talk about today is the reasons for optimism that we have for this passing offense. We spent some time breaking down where they need to get to, what it means for them to get there, what we would like to see, what have been the issues of the past. But there's a lot of reasons why we feel extremely confident in the trending upwards direction of this offense. And we saw little snippets of it in the postseason, but now we need to see it over the course of the season. So where do you start when you start thinking of reasons for optimism? Where are you at?
Mike Denbrock. I mean, that's my biggest reason for optimism, because I've seen what he can do when he runs an offense. We saw it at Notre Dame. What's the last explosive passing attack Notre Dame had? It was in 2015. I mean, they had, and this is why I keep saying, like, Mike Denbrock is going to run an offense that fits his personnel. And in 2015, you know what they had? An abundance at receiver. It wasn't size. It wasn't strength. I mean, your biggest receiver from the year before, Corey Robinson, was you know, not 100% 2015. Your next best receiver was C.J. Procise, who you moved from running back to running back. But what did you have in abundance with Will Fuller and Chris Brown and Amir Carlisle? Speed. And so what did they do a lot of that year? Did a lot of stuff to generate big plays using speed, post routes, go routes, crossing routes, things like that. And they played to it. And so then Notre Dame was able to utilize their speed. So we know that he will fit what they are, you know, what the personnel is. And so he's a guy that is a proven track record. He's built outstanding offenses at Notre Dame in the past. He built an outstanding offense at Cincinnati by his final years. I mean, we talk about what does your pass game do in their biggest moments, and obviously in 2021, they were just outclassed by Alabama. They didn't have the players to be able to compete with Alabama. But look what they did throwing the football against Notre Dame in 2021. 19 of 32 for 297 yards, 9.3 per attempt, two touchdowns, no picks, and a 157.97 quarterback rating against a pretty good Notre Dame defense that year, and Marcus Freeman running the defense. You know, you go look at what he did in the AAC title game. They only threw the ball 11 of 17 times, completed 11 of 17 passes in a 35-20 win, but it went for 190 yards, 11.2 per attempt, three touchdowns, and a 216.83 passer rating. And you turn Desmond Ridder into a legitimate, like, big play passer. So we've seen the moments where they've been able to do that at Tulsa with the talent he had there. I mean, at Cincinnati, he also did it against Tulsa the year before in the AAC title game. 19 of 29 for 269 yards, 9.3 per attempt. So we saw what he was able to do at Cincinnati, the way he was able to build those pass offenses and be effective in those seasons. And we saw what he did at LSU in his 2 years there. And now it's about, okay, now you're going into year two at Notre Dame. I think the system will be more geared to fit what he ultimately wants. Not that he has any issue building an offense around Riley Leonard. It's more so as like, hey, I'm going to build a great offense around you, young man. But we're going to try to take things to another level as we get the offense where I want it to be. And that's where we're talking about. So, you know, when you get to that point, if you look at like the 2015 offense, for example, with your backup quarterback playing all but the first seven quarters of the season, you averaged 8.7 yards per attempt, 14 yards per completion. That's a pretty good number. Completion percentage wasn't where you needed to be, 62.6. You did throw 10 interceptions that year, 25 touchdowns. Part of that was you had a redshirt freshman quarterback who made some really – he just wasn't a great decision maker in Deshaun, and some really bad picks that year. But you threw for 258.8 yards per game. A lot of those numbers were where you want them. If Notre Dame this season, for example, Trev, if you're to tell me next year Notre Dame's going to average 8.7 yards per attempt and 14 yards per completion, I'm like, we're going to have a lot of freaking fun watching this football team.
Yeah.
A lot of fun watching this football team. Now, there's other things about that offense that need to get better. They had 20 turnovers that year, 10 fumbles lost and 10 interceptions. Can't have that, right? But when I look at it, it's there were aspects of it there that were there. And, you know, that the turnovers are why that team didn't score more. There's other reasons why that team didn't score more, but some of the numbers were really impactful. And the other thing is you saw that part of that pass game step up in those big games. They threw the ball, like, they struggled early against Clemson. but then really stepped up in the second half, started getting some things going. And again, you're talking about Mike Denbrock knowing how to use running backs. What was the play that sparked Notre Dame's comeback against Clemson in 2015, Trev? Let's test your memory. Don't you hate it when I do this?
It was a wheel route to CJ Procise.
My man, out of the backfield, 50-yard touchdown. That's exactly right. And so he utilized that, and that sparked Notre Dame's comeback. I'm so glad you got that right. Sorry that I tested you that way, but it's just fun, kind of fun, because I usually know you're going to get it right. They were down 21 to 3 at that point in time. This is the fourth quarter, and that sparked their comeback. And then they ended up – they hit a crossing route to Will Fuller, crossing route to Chris Brown. But they end up going 19 of 34 for 321 yards, two touchdowns, and a pick in that game. Now, there's some plays they missed, some reads they missed. DeShone Kizer had Alize Mack wide open up the seam in the first half for a touchdown, but ended up throwing a go route to Corey Robinson in double coverage. I mean, so the decision-making still has to be better. But schematically, they were there. And you go back and look at that same season, and you think of the other big game they lost against Stanford. Who is it? Like, they lost to three teams that year that finished in the top five. Clemson, who was the national runners-up. Ohio State, who had the most talented team in the country. And then Stanford, who also finished that year in the top five, that Christian McCaffrey-led Stanford team. They lost to Stanford 38-36. They didn't lose that game because of their offense. Now, because their offense couldn't score. The DeShone Kizer turnovers hurt you, that fumble he had late in the first half. But the point is, your offense was moving the ball in that game. And in that game, Notre Dame went 13 of 25. That's it. But for 234 yards and a touchdown. And then rushed for 299. I mean, so your offense was putting in the work in that game. DeShone had a few misses in that game. But the point is, you hit the big plays. You complemented your run game effectively. And even in the Ohio State game, DeShone goes 22 of 37 for 284 yards and two touchdowns. You struggle in that game because A, your defense could not stop Ohio State. And then B, your run game was ineffective. But they started kind of getting going in the second quarter of that game. If you remember correctly, Trev, they started kind of putting some work in. It was 28-14 at halftime, and then you score in the third quarter and make it 28-21. And then, of course, Ohio State goes right down the field and but the offense was kind of doing the work back then. Think of that offense with this defense. Think about that. Think about that 2015 Notre Dame offense with all its warts, losing your starting running back, losing your starting tight end, losing your starting quarterback, as it was with no changes, with all the turnovers, and give it this year's defense. Or last year's defense. And we're talking about that's a fun team to watch that can beat anybody. And so we've seen him – the point is we've seen him do it at three stops. It's not like he was mediocre at Notre Dame and mediocre at Cincinnati, but then he had that one magical year with Jaden Daniels at LSU. We've seen him do it all over. And at some places he needed more time. At Cincinnati they needed more time. At LSU he needed a year. At Notre Dame, he needed a year because that 2014 offense was pretty darn good too,
man.
With Everett Golson,
man.
You know, but until all the injuries sunk in. But that's my optimism right there, Travis. You got Mike Denbrock, who's got a proven track record, in my opinion.
And to your point, Brian, another reason why I'm optimistic about Mike Denbrock is because those offenses weren't the same. You know what I mean? I think it would be another thing too if you look at. Okay, well, he's had success at this stop at Cincinnati and LSU and Notre Dame back in the 20-teens, but they were all the same type of offense. I think that would give me a little bit of pause going into 2025. I think it's just a testament to Mike Denbrock is a chameleon. He can morph his game plan. He can morph his schematics based on the team that he has in front of him. Now, obviously – through recruiting, he wants to build it more to the scheme that he wants to run. But Cincinnati in 2021 could not have been a more polar opposite offense of LSU in 22 and 23. But he ran effective offenses with all three of those because he's a good offensive coordinator. You know, it's the same thing with Notre Dame back in 2015. They had a lot of speed, but that team didn't have a Brian Thomas, a 6'4 guy who could take the top off a defense like that. kind of had it, I guess, with Alec Pierce, because now I guess he's a deep threat for the Colts.
He was 6'3". He wasn't Brian Thomas, but yeah, I mean, think of the big play they hit against Notre Dame with him up the seam on that last drive of the second quarter. Yeah, he had some wheels. He could be that guy there.
But it's all been with different personnel.
And that year he dominated. He also had two tight ends put up a lot of numbers too with Leonard Taylor and Josh Whiley.
Yeah.
So even though he had the three-man receiving core who had three guys in that receiving core in 2021 that all got drafted, I think fourth round or higher. He had Alec Pierce, Tyler Scott, and Trey Tucker, and he had Michael Young on that team. But his tight ends still combined for 54 catches, over 600 yards, and 10 touchdowns, even with all the production at receiver. But yeah, Alec Pierce averaged 17 yards a catch. He was their number one receiver. Their number two receiver in yards, number three in catches, was Tyler Scott. He averaged 17.3 yards per catch, to your point.
Man. But that it's all room for optimism for me from Mike Denbrock, because he's able to do it with different styles of offenses. You've seen some coordinators go from spot to spot that it's, you know, they have the same personnel. Might be different players, different names, and they continue to have the success at different schools. Mike Denbrock's been able to do that with different personnel groupings. Now, diving more specifically into that personnel, another reason why we're extremely confident in this offense taking off is the quarterback room. In the state of the quarterback room. We covered a lot of different topics when we had the show about quarterbacks, but Brian, give us a high-level overview. Quarterbacks, why is that one of your reasons for optimism?
Just because you feel like moving forward, whether it's this season or 2026, you just feel like there's just too much talent in the room for someone not to emerge and be that guy. And in the past, there's been so many years where it's like, if the starter doesn't do this, then they're in trouble. If Riley Leonard wasn't that guy this year, they would have been okay. They'd have still been a good team. They're not playing for a championship, but they wouldn't have like gone off a cliff. And offensively, I'm referring to, you know, 2022, Tyler Buchner goes down, and you know, God love Drew Pine. He did it. He did his played his absolute best. He's a great kid, but you needed your defense to be outstanding. You needed your special teams to be the best in the country. You needed your run game to take over, because Drew wasn't putting a team on his shoulders and leading them to a championship. I mean, that's just kind of who you were. And I think of like 2020, if Ian Book would have got hurt in 2020, I'm trying to even think who they had. Brendan Clark and Drew Pine as a freshman. That was their backup quarterbacks in 2020. And if Ian Book got hurt, you were done. I mean, your team was toast. 2021, you're relying on a true freshman Tyler Buchner or a sophomore Drew Pine. You know, I mean, just there was such a big drop off, and now just God given talent. You have three quarterbacks that are better throwers than anybody you had on your 2022 roster. Because think about it, you're comparing senior version of Steve Angeli to freshman version of Steve Angeli. You're comparing CJ Carr to Tyler Buchner. Or let's say CJ Carr to Drew Pine, trying to match skill sets, and then Kenny Minchie to Tyler Buchner as passers. You know, or let's go 2021. You're comparing Steve Angeli to Jack Cohn. Okay, that might be a little bit, you know, Jack's got more in, you know, mentally, but Steve's got a stronger arm than Jack does. He's a better athlete than Jack was. And, or you've got CJ Carr against redshirt freshman Drew Pine, or Kenny Minchie as a junior against freshman version of Tyler Buchner as a passer. I mean, just kind of go down the line, the depth at quarterback, and we're not even talking about Blake Hebert, who we don't expect to be a factor in 2025, but he will be down the road. You're going to have Noah Grubbs coming in after that, who's got a ton of arm talent. So you've recruited the position so effectively in recent years, and what's funny is it's been multiple guys doing it, right? Obviously, Tommy Rees landed the three that are currently there. I mean, for all the people that want to kind of be like, Tommy Rees sucked. Well, all the excitement we all have at quarterback for next year, he recruited all three of them. He recruited Steve, he recruited Kenny, and he recruited CJ. All three of them. Well, thank you, Tommy. It's kind of like how I said, you know, Tony Alford's parting gift to Notre Dame was a class of Dexter Williams and Josh Adams. As he left for Ohio State, well, Tommy Rees's parting gift was, all right, I'm out. I'm heading to Alabama. And my parting gift to my alma mater is Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr. Thank you. You know, appreciate you. You know what I'm saying? And so just the arm talent in that room is so good, Trev, so good. It's going to be really just that's where I'm excited. And it fits what Mike Denbrock wants to do. Because, yes, Kenny Minchie's an athletic kid that can run. But make no mistake, Kenny Minchie's two most important traits involve what's up here and what's right here. Like, the running is a nice little, like, icing on the cake, so to speak. I don't really like that one because why have a cake if it's not going to have icing? How about a little bit of a cherry on top, right? I don't need a cherry on top. It's nice to have, though. I want icing on my cake. That's just ridiculous saying. As soon as you say, like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Of course you want icing on your cake. Like, my least favorite, you want your cake and eat it too. Well, why would I want a cake if I can't eat it? Of course I want my cake and I want to eat it too. That's the dumbest expression I've ever heard. Cherry on top's a better one. Kenny's running ability is a cherry on top to a wonderful Sunday. And CJ's a pretty good athlete too that can run, which, again, cherry on top of a wonderful Sunday. Steve showed he's got some mobility. Now, there's a difference between pocket feel, which Steve is not good with so far, but then being athletic enough to run. He's shown he can scramble and run. He showed that against Oregon State, but please, for the love of God, Steve, don't try to hurdle anybody because we almost saw you get your neck broke against Oregon State. That was very scary. I'm being dead serious. That was scary when he landed. I was like, oh, my God, that's not good.
Yeah.
So don't do that again. But we saw against Purdue, he can break tackles. He can run. He's a good athlete. They're all good athletes. But their all number one traits are all their minds and their arms. That's what I want to see. And that's what has me excited because, and again, I know this is going to piss off the Steve Angeli fans. And again, Steve Angeli's a more talented quarterback than Drew Pine. I've said this before. Notre Dame's going 10-2 next year, no matter who's a quarterback. But to me, anyone that's being honest and objective is going to look at CJ and Kenny and say, but that's different. That doesn't mean they're going to be better quarterbacks. We're talking about just throwers. You can be a better thrower, not a better quarterback. But just as far as the arm strength, the velocity, the ball placement, the accuracy, it's just different with those two kids. And it's been a long time since I've seen a Notre Dame roster with one CJ Carr or Kenny Minchie, much less two. And those teams did not have a Blake Hebert and a Steve Angeli also on the roster. And that's what gets me, because the margin for error is so much greater now. God forbid you have to turn to Steve Angeli because the two young guys aren't ready. You know what? You can win a lot of games with Steve Angeli. Okay, CJ Carr gets beat out by Kenny Minchie, and so does Steve Angeli. Woe is us. I guess we're going to have that super arm-talented, smart kid from Tennessee that's athletic running the team. Oh, no. Heaven forbid. Or, well, I guess they're going with a redshirt freshman that's never played a meaningful down. I don't know how we're going to survive with that arm talent leading the offense. It's almost like you can't be upset with whoever wins the job unless you're just so obsessed with, like, a guy winning it. And that's why I've said to you, like, if Steve Angeli, who I think is number three on the list as far as talent, but if Steve Angeli goes out there in a open, real competition, fair competition, beats out Kenny and Steve, let's roll. Because he's going to have to be pretty good to beat those guys out. Let's roll. If Kenny beats out Steve and CJ, let's roll. If CJ, let's roll. As long as it's an open, honest competition. And heck, even Blake Hebert comes out there and just dominates. Okay, let's roll. They're all talented kids, and they can all win a lot of games in Notre Dame, but they can bring the passing element that Notre Dame needs a lot more of. And so that's my second biggest reason. And they're working with an offensive coordinator that has shown he can get a lot out of quarterbacks everywhere he's been. And that excites me.
Yeah, Brian, I don't have too much to add. We talked about quarterbacks last week. I think you hit all the major points for me. It's just the one that I would echo is your opportunity of missing is just so much smaller now because you have all of the talent pieces. To your point, if Ian Book goes down, you're kind of scratching your head. Yeah.
You may not win another game.
Yeah. Actually.
You're a 500 team at best if Ian Book goes down in 2020.
So you go through and you look at just all of the different times. It's the last time I've felt like this really since like a 2015. If you go back and just look at the whole state of a quarterback room. In 2015, Malik goes down. Deshaun steps in. He has a pretty good season. But even if Deshaun Watson were to go down, you have a guy that was highly touted in Brandon Wimbush. And so you look at the different opportunities that that room could have had, leaves you feeling pretty confident. But in other years, it hasn't been that way. So for me, when I look at the quarterback room, the thing that gives me the most optimism is whoever they go with, assuming all things are a fair competition, they're going to put Notre Dame in a really, really good spot to win. And one, if this past season showed us anything, if a player has the opportunity to get hurt, they could get hurt, right? But for me, it's just if Steve wins, you have Kenny or CJ. And then you could just go down the list. And no scenario is a bad scenario where you're like, well, I guess we'll just hope Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price combine for 2,000 rushing yards this year to get us to where we need to go. It's
right.
They're going to be in good hands.
This O-line better be really good. Or right. Yeah. Like, it's almost like if you can't get it right with this quarterback room, you know me, Trev. I'm not one of those, I believe in curses. I'm not one of those like, but it's almost like, you know, I don't believe in curses, but I'm starting to at least think I need to at least revisit it if you can't, over the next couple of years, get it right with this group.
Yeah.
It's like, just I don't know how you're going to do it. I mean, this is a really talented room. I graded Kenny Minchie as a 4-star quarterback, top 100 player with 4.5-star upside. That means that of a top 50 player. I graded CJ Carr as a 5-star coming out and a 5-star now. I mean, an upside. I mean, the talent is immense. And Steve Angeli's no bum. You know, Blake Hebert I graded as a top 150 quarterback with an even higher ceiling because he's still kind of raw. So I just, you know, if you can't get it right with this group, you either got the wrong quarterbacks coach, or which I don't think is true because he also is the guy that developed Desmond Ridder, or I might have to rethink this whole curse thing, which I don't believe in, but I may have to rethink it. You know, there's something we're going to have to do, like an exorcism. I mean, it's a Catholic church. Hey, y'all need to come to Notre Dame and do some exorcisms in the quarterback room, because there's some spirit of something that's, you know, that's in there. And it's like, you know, I mean, just we got to figure this out, because if you can't get it right with this group, man, I don't know when it's going to happen. And I'm telling you, if you can't get it right with CJ Carr, dude, I'm not talking about – that's the whole point. The whole point is it's not CJ or bust. It's – yeah, Father David's like, I got to cover Brian. Yes, seriously, Father David. If, like, you can't get it right with this quarterback, you and I are going to go and we're going to do some serious, like, spiritual warfare in the goog. I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're going to have to handle some business, because, I mean – there's just so much talent in that room, and it's not just CJ or bust or Kenny or bust or Steve or bust. I mean, I know people have kind of put themselves into camps because that's what we do. We don't apparently have like the depth as fans to like root for more than one quarterback on the roster. We can only be like Angeli guys or Steve guys or CJ guys, or I mean Kenny or CJ guys. But it's like, dude, as long as it's a fair open competition and the right guy, and you pick the right guy, I don't care. Because there's talent in the room to do what you need to do. And that's got me excited. But, Trev, you can have all talent in the world at quarterback. But you got to have some dudes to throw the ball to.
Sure do. And this is another huge reason of optimism for us. It's the wide receiver room. And it's getting there. In years past, and we spent some time talking about it and what we must see and some of the issues. But the gap is starting to close at the wide receiver room. Call a spade, they still don't have a Jeremiah Smith in that room. They don't. They don't have a Ryan Williams in that room. But what they
either do does anyone have, that's other than Ohio State and Alabama.
Right.
I mean, that's not right. The standard. There's no Jamar Chase. Well, nobody except for Ohio State has a Jamar Chase.
So for all those reasons, it's just it leaves you confident in the state of the room. You look at what Jaden Greathouse did and how he ended his season. And I pay close attention to how players perform in the biggest moments. I would feel less confident wholeheartedly if Jaden Greathouse had that performance against – if his Penn State performance was against Navy and his Ohio State performance was against Army, and we're going into 2025 and it's like, well, at least we have Jaden Greathouse coming back, you know. But – you had those performances in the semifinals of the college football playoff and the national championship against two really, really good defenses. One of them was the number one ranked pass defense.
Great play he made on third down. We always talk about the Bo Collins catch, but if Jaden doesn't win to get open, on that third down play against A&M, that drive never gets going. You know, I mean, you think of the plays he made. We talk about the slot fade for the touchdown against Penn State, but that was a huge play. But I would argue his three third down catches were just as big because they led to other scores. I mean, he needed to convert a third down on the last drive to even get in field goal range to have the game winner. So it wasn't just like he made a couple big plays here and there. It was a lot of big plays, a lot of big plays.
And then you go through and you look at what's coming in behind it. Jordan Faison's going to have another year under his belt. Hopefully he can stay healthy. You had three true freshmen in 2024 who now have a year of experience in Micah Gilbert, Cam Williams, Logan Saldate. Hopefully at least one of them can make the jump into getting into the rotation. Then you look at what's coming in via the transfer portal. Malachi Fields, who we're all really, really high on for what he has. His physical tool sets, his experience at playing the game, that's absolutely massive. I will lump tight ends in there as well. Hopefully they can stay healthy just as far as pass catchers go. But for me, you look at the wide receiver room, there's a lot of promise in there, Brian. A lot of things to make you feel really confident about 2025.
Yeah. Look, you got to get it all in this, and not just 25, but moving forward. It's got to get better. Here's the thing. I can acknowledge these two. I believe these two things are both true. Notre Dame absolutely can and must recruit better at wide receiver. I think that's a fact. They should recruit better. They like this 25 class. I like Scrap Richardson. I like Elijah Burris. And honestly, Jerome Bettis Jr.'s senior film was much better. To the point where I'm like, dude, take him. I don't have a problem with any of those guys. I have a problem with taking those guys and then passing on Daylon McCutcheon or Cooper Perry or not landing a Jalen Cooper in the class. That's more of the issue. You know, the year before recruiting, I mean, look, Cam Williams, Micah Gilbert, Logan Saldate. It's not a recruiting problem. You got to just show that you can develop those guys. I'm not worried about what happened as a freshman. I mean, you obviously have some concerns. You know, was Cam not ready? Is Micah Gilbert? What? But the talent's there. Year before that, you still have, even if you just look at who's on the roster, not even what left, you've got Jaden Greathouse. You've got Jordan Faison, and you've got KK Smith. And then, but there's another level you can and should get to. Every 2 to 3 years, you need to land a dude. You know, that's even a step above a Jaden. You need to land a Malachi Fields out of high school so you have him for 3-4 years, not going and getting him through a portal. And that's the kind of thing you need, that I want to see more of. I need them to go get a Naeem Burrows in this class, or you know, some of the guys that I view are like the real, you got to go out. And I said of a group of six that includes Dylan Faison, Trent Mosley, Naeem Burrows, Connor Solomon, Caden Finley, Braden Robinson, you got to get three of those guys or four of those guys. I mean, there's a couple others on the board that are in that category, but you get the point that I'm making. Those, you need to get a year where you have those type of guys. So we can acknowledge that recruiting a receiver has to get better and can get better. However, this season with Greathouse, you got super lucky with Jordan Faison. Let's be real. Notre Dame did not recruit Jordan Faison thinking he would become what he has been. They did not. If they thought that, they would have offered him a scholarship. They wouldn't have let him play lacrosse. They would have brought him in on scholarship. They did not think he was going to be that. They liked him. That's why they offered him a walk-on spot and recruited him to come play football. But they did not think he was going to turn into what he turned into as a freshman and now sophomore. You got lucky there. But you've got him. You've got Greathouse. You've got Cam Williams. Coach him up. You've got Micah Gilbert. Coach him up. Logan Saldate. Coach him up. You've got Malachi Fields coming in. You've got Will Pauling coming in. You're not asking Will Pauling to be your dude. You're asking him to, at best, be your number two, most likely your three or four. I can live with that, if that. You've got KK Smith also. So, and then at tight end, you've got weapons too. But just at receiver, there's enough talent there for you to have a really good passing game next year. You may have to do more of a group approach than just having that dude, and that's okay. But you're not. You can't say that they don't have the talent to be really good on offense next year at receiver. Can it get better? Yes. Does it need to get better? Yes. But it's still really good, and there's no excuses next year now that Greathouse is a junior, and he's already shown what he can do. Faison's a junior. He's shown what he can do. You got to find a way to get KK Smith healthy and coach him up. You got to coach up Cam Williams. I don't care how raw he is. I don't care. I had a story, Trev, that I was telling somebody the other day. When I got to Duquesne the year before, we were replacing the guy that was their all-time leading receiver, a kid named Jeremy something. I forget his name, but he was really good. He was like 6'2 and a half, 220. And he was with the Steelers at the time. He was in camp with the Steelers. And I was like, how did this 6'2", 220 pound guy that ran a 4.48 or something like that at 4.5, how did he end up at Duquesne? And like, he played in a triple option offense where he caught like 6 passes in his career. They're like, Brian, this is a true story. I said, okay. We're out to eat at Fatheads one night. Fatheads. And in Pittsburgh on the south side. And Gattuso was telling me the story. He goes, first day of camp, we were trying him at receiver. And we said, run a curl route. He's like, what's a curl route? He goes, you run about 10 yards and you sit down. He ran 10 yards and sat down. Literally sat down on the ground. He was that raw. And I'm like, look, okay, it is what it is. That's what you're working with. If Cam Williams is that raw, fine. That guy became the school's all-time leading receiver by the time it was done. Coach him up. Coach him up. Get him ready. The talent's there. Same with Micah Gilbert, Logan Saldate. So the point is, get them coached up. The talent's there. Coach it up. And then keep recruiting. And I love what Mike Brown's doing on the receiving core, right? Or on the recruiting trail right now. He's putting together a really good list of players. And it's growing. They're not counting. They're not saying, hey, we got a great group of 6 or 7. We don't need to offer anybody else. They just offered another receiver a couple days ago that's really talented. They're going to keep building the board. But now you got to close, right? That's the big thing, Travis. You got to close. But the talent's there. I don't hear any excuses in 2025 about we don't have enough talent. No, you don't have a Jeremiah Smith. You know, you don't have a Ryan Williams, but you got plenty of talent with the running game you have, because you know what those teams don't have? You know what Ohio State doesn't have? You know what Alabama doesn't have? Jeremiah Love. You know what I don't think Alabama has? CJ Carr. You know, with all due respect to Julian Sand, I don't think they have CJ Carr either. It's a good player. You know what they don't have? They don't have Notre Dame's tight end room. So I don't want to hear excuses. Okay, so maybe you're not as good as Ryan Williams or Ohio State. That's fine. I watched Michigan beat that team, and your receiving room is way better than theirs is. So I don't want to hear excuses about your receiver room. It's because guys are older. Coach them up. Get them ready. And I'm excited to see what this group is going to do in year 2 of Mike Brown. I really am. Because we saw some growth from this group in the last 5-6 games of the season, Trevor, that has me – kind of excited about what they're going to be now that you get another full offseason with him. Really excited about that. So that's another reason why I'm excited about it. And then, of course, wrapping up, Trev, you know where else you have a lot of talent? And we didn't even get into running back tight end rooms in the past game. That's definitely something that I think with Jeremiah Love and Aeneas Williams, like, you should definitely be throwing the ball more to your running backs next year. But the final reason I'm excited, and big boys up front, Trev, there's a lot of talent in that room, dude. I mean, you could take your second team offensive line next year and be like, that's going to be your second team offensive line in 2021 would be better than the offensive line that Jack Cohn had to play for in 2021.
Absolutely. That room is loaded with talent. And now there's experience sprinkled throughout it as well. You have Anthony Knapp, who has 15 games under his belt. You have Emil Wagner, who has 16 games under his belt. Charles Jagasaw came back. You want to talk about how high they are on him? He came back in what everybody thought was a season-ending injury and started in the national championship game.
That dude has started 2 games his entire career. It's a bowl game and the title game. And the only other game he played a meaningful snap was the Orange Bowl. Like, just save him for the postseason, all right? Just say, hey, Jags, we're going to redshirt you. We're going to sit you next year until the playoffs. I mean, it's like, can we get a regular season snap out of Charles Jagasaw, please? Man. For the love of God. Man. Can we get a meaningful regular season snap out of Jagasaw? We know he can ball out in the postseason. Can I get him for the regular season? But to your point, Trev, he's the least experienced guy on the roster. And he's the most talented. And they've just thrown him in with no experience, no prep, into some big moments. And guess what he's done? He's played really well. They threw him in at left tackle in the national title game against JTT, and he had been playing guard up until that week since he came back from his injury. Right guard at that. And he looked exactly like he looked, like you'd expect him to look had he played all year at that position.
The dude's insane. And I know we've talked this offseason about how when you have the talent that you have at offensive line that Notre Dame has, nobody is a for sure starter. If 56 is not somewhere in that starting lineup, I will join you and Father David Penny on whatever conquest you guys are going on inside of the Goog, because there I'm going to have way too many questions. But it's not just Charles Jagasaw, though. That room is now loaded with talent. You go and you look at what players did. Like, I love what Pat Coogan and Rocco Spindler did. I do. The role that they took on in 2024 after being starters in 2023, there's something to say about that. And you commend them for what they did. But what Notre Dame has coming back to replace what that was, you have Billy Shrouth coming into his senior year, right? Academically, you have Ashton Craig, who's hopefully going to be back healthy from injury. You have Anthony Knapp, who will fit somewhere along the offensive line, has started 15 games as a true freshman.
Maybe. Like, that's the thing. Is like, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe. You have guys like Sullivan Absher, who've been waiting in the wings, who's a massive person. You have Charles Jagasaw, arguably your most talented guy. And your second arguably most talented guy in the room is another player in Gerby Lambert, who's been waiting in the wings, developing, and will now have a full season under his belt. Oh, and the other person he's going to be in contention with is Emil Wagner, your only offensive lineman from 2024, who started all 16 games and remained healthy.
And you're bringing in a true freshman who is ranked as the number 4 overall player in the country by On3. And I graded as a 5-star as well.
A spoil of riches, Brian.
Spoil and, you know, Joe Otting looked really good when he got in backup moments this past year. I wasn't super high on Chris Tarrick when they signed him. He's impressed me. You have Styles Prescott, Peter Jones. I mean,
I'll say
talent
this.
In size is not an issue.
I'll say this. Your thoughts, which I have the same about the quarterback room, of there's kind of no way you get this wrong. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel the same about the offensive line unit.
Yeah. If you screw this up, you shouldn't be coaching in Notre Dame. If you can't get this right, you shouldn't be coaching in Notre Dame.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. But the offensive line room is absolutely loaded up with talent. Brian, do you have anything more to add and reasons for optimism?
I mean, just sum it all up, Trev. It's just, man, there's so much talent there. And there's so much potential there. And look, it's got to get all put together. I mean, there's a lot that has to happen for it to get put together. There's no doubt. It's not just going to be this thing where you roll the balls out and you've got to coach it up. It's not so elite that you can't, like, you can't ruin Jeremiah Smith as long as you just put him on the field. Like, if he doesn't get a lick better from what he was the minute he arrived on campus, you're fine. Just don't. The only way you can screw him up is not playing him or not letting him, you know what I mean? Just, you don't throw him the ball. You can screw up Cam Williams. He's a guy that needs a lot more work and a lot more polish. Not all 5-star talents are built the same. So coach him up. Develop him. Coach up Micah Gilbert. Coach up KK Smith. Oh, we didn't have a lot of speed this year. Well, you got this cat number 11 that might be your fastest guy. Coach him up. You know, I mean, that's the thing, Trev. I'm at the point now where it's like between the loaded running back room with multiple, I mean, Janarian Price can catch the ball. He's more of a running back catching the ball, whereas Jeremiah and especially Aeneas catch the ball more like receivers. Jadarian's a good pass catching back. Kedron, like, really impressed me in fall camp and impressed, Ryan went and saw him at the Army game, looked really good catching the ball there as a running back, meaning he's going to catch swings and screens and arrows and angle routes and things like that. Aeneas and Jeremiah can literally line up a receiver. I mean, we saw Aeneas run the best sluggo route that anyone's run all season for Notre Dame and catch a go ball that was not like he had to track that sucker. It was not just perfectly placed. He had to kind of, you know, Willie Mays it a little bit. And then you look at Eli Raridan and you talk about, I mean, Jack Larson's might have the best hands on the team. When you go watch what he did in high school, I mean, that dude's hands are insanely good. I don't expect to see Cooper Flanagan. You got James Flanagan coming in as a top 100 player. And then, you got quarterback talent, O-line talent. I don't know if – and look, I know some of you are going to think that I'm giving you. I'm not one for hyperbole. I've told you at times, and I don't think the talent's there, Trev. I really look at this roster of what we saw. Well, some of it's what we thought coming out of high school, but a lot of it's just what we've seen at Notre Dame. And you're just like, this team is the talent in this room is different. But on top of that, it's the depth of talent. In 2021, it was, or 2022, it was, if Lorenzo Styles and Deion Colsey have breakouts, they're going to be fine. If they don't, they're in trouble. And that's exactly what happened. They didn't break out, and you were in trouble. In 2023, it was, if Tobias Merriweather has the breakout we think, they're going to be just fine. And if he doesn't, you're in trouble. He didn't, and they were in trouble. And there's been these years where it's like you were counting on like one guy, and if he doesn't pan out, or two guys, if they don't pan out, you're in trouble. Now it's like, if this guy, even if you didn't have Malachi Fields and Will Pauling, I'd still say, I think this receiving core can still be pretty good. I don't know if it can be good enough to win a title, but it's still pretty good, especially with the tight ends. But then you throw in Malachi Fields and Will Pauling, and you're just like, with the running, they're so talented, but there's depth of talent. I mean, imagine, let's just say, God forbid, you go into next year and something happens to Charles Jagasaw again, and I hope not. But we can't ignore it because he did get injured as a senior in high school and he got injured this past season. Okay, so then you got to choose from a tackle room that includes Emile Wagner, Anthony Knapp, Gerby Lambert, and Will Black. I think you'll be okay. I think you'll be okay. Ashton Craig gets hurt again. All right, I think Joe Otting is, or Anthony Knapp will be just fine at that position. I mean, you could lose Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price and you're like, I guess we got to roll with Aeneas Williams, Kedron Young, and Nolan James then, and Jabron Payne. I don't know how we're going to survive, I say incredibly sarcastically. You know, it's like the depth of talent is so exciting at every position. You're inexperienced at certain positions, but just God-given ability and athleticism and talent and size. I look at him like, what's the weakness? All the weaknesses are related to experience and proven production in this system. There's no like, I don't know if that guy's good enough. It's like, I don't know if that guy is ready to start now, but the talent is there. And that's what has me so excited. I don't know how the quarterback room is going to handle things from an experience standpoint, but you know what we're going to see next year? We're going to see some dimes. Mm. They are going to make mistakes too. They will. Mm. But we're going to see some throws you're like, mm-hmm. And notice I didn't say if CJ Carr's the starter. If Kenny Minchie's a starter. I just said at quarterback next year, you're going to see some dimes. And at receiver next year, you're going to see some dudes going off at times. Now, can they do it consistently enough? Can they do it in the big games? Those are all question marks, but it won't be because of talent. That's what has me excited. It won't be because you had an injury or two. You're going to have a lot of injuries next year for this offense to be like, I don't know if you have the talent left. A lot. Yeah. I mean, think about 2023. You needed your freshman to play. Your freshmen this year were good football players, two of my greatest top 250 players, but you're going to need your freshman and sophomore class to lose three or four guys before they have to play. At least two guys before they have to play. That's a different situation. I hope that they play because they're talented, but you get what I'm saying? Just as far as need,
it's not there.
You know, you could make the argument, and this is kind of my final thought, as a whole, wrapping up the offense, you could make the argument that outside of Leonard's legs and his experience, the offense as a whole has upgraded at every spot. Because...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because, I mean, I would hear out like Coogan and Spindler's experience as well. Like, that's another factor. But I love what Bo Collins did. You know, I love that he came to Notre Dame and elected to finish out his season in South, or his career in South Bend. And with all of the flaws of last year's team, they still made it to the national championship. Hats off to the 2024 team. Mm-hmm. With that being said, I think Malachi Fields is an upgrade in the boundary. I do. I appreciate Chris Smith. I think he was misused. Mm-hmm. But literally, if Will Pauling comes in and just does that, and then you factor in what Jaden Greathouse can do and what Jordan Faison can do, and hopefully the development of all
what they've proven they can do.
Yes.
To your point.
Yes.
Right.
you could make the argument that at every spot on offense, outside of Riley Leonard's legs and his experience of playing in college football, they've upgraded at every spot. You could make that argument. And that's the way that I look at it. That's why I'm excited, man. That's why I'm so excited for this offense next year.
Well, you talk about like Bo Collins and you know, hit what he did, and he did some good things, and I'm glad Bo came. Like, they were better because Bo came. Yes, he didn't always do what, but whatever. You can appreciate what the young man did. But he ends his career, and including his time at Notre Dame, with 132 career catches for 1,780 yards and 14 touchdowns. That includes what he did at this year at Notre Dame. Malachi Fields shows up at Notre Dame with 129 career catches, 1,849 yards, 14.3 per catch, and 11 touchdowns. And he did that with only playing one game as a true freshman, or I mean as a sophomore, and he got hurt. And in that one game he played, he had five catches for 58 yards and a touchdown. And he got hurt, missed the rest of the year. And still has his production matches, Bo's coming in. Will Pauling comes in, despite only having one catch for 6 yards as a freshman. He comes in with 129 career catches. Again, Bo had 132. And he has 1,372 yards. Bo had 1,780, right? So one guy has more higher yards per catch. And he has 9 touchdowns. Bo had 14. And so you're losing Bo Collins, and you're replacing him with two guys that have matched his production already at the Power 5 level. And that's the difference. I mean, these guys are far more proven than what Jaden Harrison was coming out of Marshall. I mean, Jaden Harrison's best year was like 20-some catches for 400 yards at Marshall. These guys are coming. I mean, Will Pauling had more production than that in a disappointing season for him, or injury-riddled season. So you've got that, but now it's like, can they do it at Notre Dame? And those are all fair questions. Our point is not to say, guys, they're going to look like 2019 LSU this year. Guys, they're going to definitely average over 40 points per game this year. They're back in the title game, and they're going to win it this year. They're going to go 16-0. They're going to win every game by 20 points. I'm not saying any of that stuff. What I'm saying, however, is you have the talent to be a championship-caliber offense. You've got to put it all together. But the talent's there. There's no excuses talent-wise anymore. There's no excuses depth-wise anymore. That's the difference. A year ago, you had Emile Wagner. Once Charles Jagasaw went down, you had Emile Wagner and Anthony Knapp playing. And that's really all you had at tackle besides a true freshman, a Gerby Lambert, who wasn't an early enrollee. Now you've got Emile Wagner, you've got Anthony Knapp, you've got Gerby Lambert. You're going to have a year two of you've got Charles Jagasaw, you got year two of Gerby Lambert, you got year two of Styles Prescott. You not only have Will Black, but you're also adding Matty Augustine and Owen Strebig to the mix. So again, it's just the talent's there. And then, you know, somebody in the chat, Al Bundy in the chat just said, tight end has me a bit concerned. That's the one fair concern because of the injury to Cooper Flanagan that I would say that's the position that I have some concerns about from a depth standpoint because of the injuries. Because if you lose Eli Raridan, you have to play Jack Larson and James Flanagan now. You know, Ty Washington has played a lot of, you know, decent numbers, not a lot, but he's played some snaps. But he's far from proven at Arkansas, far from proven. So that is the one position, I'll give you that, Al Bundy, where you could say, I'm concerned about the depth because of the injuries. Fair. But there's no questions about talent. And honestly, they could fix the depth problems with one move. One move. There's a transfer portal pickup they need to make from their own defense. Mike Denbrock needs to walk his hind parts down to Chris Ash's office and go talk to Marcus Freeman, go talk to Chris Ash, and to go sit down with Max Bull and say, all right, I'm gonna make a trade with you. I'm gonna get you a steak dinner if you give me Preston Zinner. That's what I'm doing. Give me Preston Zinner. He can play for me. You move Preston Zinner over to offense, and all of a sudden, all those – because we said this when he signed. I think Preston Zinner could play tight end in Notre Dame. In a different a movement tight end, a flex guy. He can catch the ball. He can block. I mean, he can run. He's 6'3", 240. No, he's not going to look like Mitchell Evans, but he's going to be able to absolutely – think of Davis Sherwood, like the role Davis Sherwood had the last couple years, and then put a guy that's 2 inches taller, 10 pounds heavier, and a whole lot faster and more athletic in that role. So, like, dude, that's an easy fix. And you know what you know what's going to happen to your linebacker depth if you make that move? Nothing. Because he's not going to play for you anyway because you're so loaded at linebacker. You put him over to tight end, and not only did you get a depth player, you got a kid that can play, in my opinion. That's what I would do, and then all of a sudden you fix that. But I will grant Al's that is the one position, Trevor, where I am concerned about the depth from an injury standpoint. But if you just look at the roster, it's like, that's a pretty good roster. But you have to account that Cooper's hurt, Cooper Flanagan's hurt, and Eli Raridan has only played one full season at Notre Dame, and that's this past year. That's fair. That is definitely fair. I'll give you that.
Agreed. I agree. Well, look, guys, that's going to do it for the offensive edition of this show. We broke down the passing offense and why we feel confident, the areas that they've lacked over the past couple seasons. But don't go anywhere. We have some mailbag questions in here that we're going to get to, and we're going to go for about an hour or until the questions kind of run out. So please be sure to get those in the chat. But before we get there, guys, please be sure to hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell, share this podcast with your friends and family. And of course, the best way to support what we do here is subscribe to the premium message boards at boards.irishbreakdown.com.